We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it down.
You're tuned in to 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Kyle Long from Nuvo News Weekly, and this is Cultural Manifesto. On the first half of tonight's broadcast, I'll be speaking with U.S. Representative for Indiana's 7th Congressional District, Andre Carson. Representative Carson recently organized his 7th annual Hip Hop and Politics panel as part of the Congressional Black Caucus Week in Washington, D.C. Representative Carson will be telling us all about that event, and he'll also be filling us in on his early days as a hip-hop MC in Indianapolis. And in the second half of tonight's program, I'll be speaking with Indianapolis hip-hop MC Comdot. Comdot will be previewing tracks from his forthcoming LP, The Gray Maxell. Before I introduce Representative Carson, I want to set the tone with a classic hip-hop selection. From their 1998 LP, Mos Def and Talib Kweli are Black Star, this is Black Star with Respiration. I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were sussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters of Gotham, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears is pricked, seeking what will transmit. The scribes can apply to transcript. Yo, this ain't no time where the usual is suitable.
I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm honored to be joined via phone by U.S. Representative for Indiana's 7th Congressional District, Andre Carson. Representative Carson recently organized the 7th Annual Hip Hop and Politics Panel as part of the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. This discussion series has brought together a range of important activists for conversations on the subject of hip hop music and its influence on the political and social climate of America. Hello, Representative Carson. Thank you for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Representative Carson, I want to give you a chance to talk about the history and purpose of your annual Hip Hop and Politics panel. But first, I wondered if you'd mind telling us a little bit about your personal relationship with hip hop music. I know you have a deep connection to this art form.
Yeah, well, the Hip Hop and Politics event is something that we do along with the Hip Hop Caucus, Reverend Yearwood, and we have different hosts. One time we had Indy's own Amos Brown. We've had Roland Martin this year. We had Michael Skolnick, who's the president of one of Russell Simmons' companies, and he does a lot of writing for Russell Simmons, and he is Russell Simmons' right-hand man. And we've had numerous people. We've had Rakim there. We've had DMC from Run DMC. We've had MC Light. We've had Hank Shockley from the group Public Enemy. We've had numerous people present and a lot of surprise guests stopped by. We had Omarosa there from The Apprentice. She was there a few weeks ago. And it's really a forum to reach out to the hip-hop generation and have a serious dialogue about how we can leverage the voting block of millennials, Generation Xers, Generation Yers, and others in terms of impacting political life in our country.
And what are the origins of this event? I believe you started the Hip Hop and Politics panel your first year in Congress. Is that correct? You've been doing this for 7 years now, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And for me, as one who has been coming to the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation's annual weekend leadership conference for almost 20 years now, I remember going to different panels, excited about going to business development panels and healthcare workshops. Not all of the workshops were created equally, and I felt like the one workshop that I always looked forward to going to was Maxine Waters' Young, Gifted, and Black workshop. And I even told her how inspired I was by her workshop. And so as someone who used to rap, I started off as a young kid. I've always been a poet, and I've always had a fascination with words going back to the bookmobile that would come to St. Rita and I would get different books. And even in high school, there's a young lady who was a poet. I saw her a few weeks ago. Her name is Allison Horton. She's an accomplished poet. She bought me a rhyming dictionary in high school, I think because she appreciated my fascination with words. But we were poets, and I was in several groups, and I did several talent shows. I did commercials, political commercials, and recorded a few tracks. But it was just my love of hip-hop and appreciation for hip-hop and seeing hip-hop's influence throughout the years from its inception in the Bronx to its expansion internationally all the way to China, South Asia, and even Russia, that begs the question, how can the hip-hop generation leverage its voting bloc to impact change in society?
And you mentioned your time as an active participant in creating hip-hop music. Am I right? You were MC Juggernaut of the Catch-22 crew? Is that correct?
Well, I didn't use MC on my name after, you know, maybe the mid-80s. I was, you know, ADC. I was OMP. I went through different names. I was, I went through several names. I landed on the Juggernaut. It was the most popular name, but MC was never in front of it.
Okay.
I was a part of Catch-22. I was a part of a group called the SWAT Team. The groups I'm most known to be affiliated with were Catch-22 and SWAT Team, and there are a few other groups, XN and some other groups.
And I read an interview with you where you mentioned that you played on some bills with some big hip-hop acts. Is there anything, as you look back at that time of your life, that any shows that really stand out?
I did a show. There was a show, and I was on stage at the end when all the acts came out. It was Ice Cube, Da Brat, Above the Law, and I'm missing someone else. And then later there was DJ Kool, Let Me Clear My Throat. I was with Catch-22 on that one. I was with Catch-22 when they opened up for Too Short.
Wow.
As well.
So you have deep history in this art form, and there's a history to your work in this music.
Well, I mean, I had some friends who were on Def Jam. They were on the Nutty Professor soundtrack, a local group called Dose of Soul. My friend Greg was in that group, of course, Stacey McCracken and some others. And they were on the first Nutty Professor soundtrack. And so it didn't get beyond there. We had a few auditions with Def Jam, but it didn't expand beyond some of our recordings and doing shows. But the love remained. I mean, I did some local promotions with my cousin, where we rented out the Madam Walker building and a few skating rinks, and we did quite well as some young kids who just wanted to promote the music, but it was a part of my entrepreneurial spirit that I've always had since I was a kid. But it was all, you know, a lot of it was connected to music and the impact that music has had on my life. And I think when you look at young men and women who are fascinated by hip-hop and who are poets themselves, academically they may be failing or struggling in school, but if one were to look at their writings, you could catch the brilliance and ingenuity that is contained in their writings. They just need the right person or persons to extract and navigate that brilliance to develop it, to hone it, and to put it to good use.
I read an interesting quote from you, Representative Carson, that I think speaks to sort of the complexity of hip-hop culture. You said that hip-hop got me into trouble and it kept me out of trouble. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think in terms of being affiliated with groups who were unafraid to speak truth to power, who may have said some unsettling things that raised serious or, dare I say, Socratic questioning. But at the same time, I mean, it kept me out of trouble. I was never a bad kid. I was never the class clown. I may have ghostwritten some of his or her material occasionally, but I think I was just a kid who wanted to do something with myself. Being raised by my grandmother, I wanted to pay it forward, but I found myself fascinated, you know, reading my mom's books when she was in college and reading my grandmother's books that were at home. And I came out of a reading household, and I went to a school, St. Rita, that encouraged reading. And outside of my work that was assigned, I also had assignments at home in terms of reading and having the right reports. So I had double the work. And while I resented it as a young man, it really helped to develop my vocabulary, and it gave me a deeper appreciation for reading and comprehension.
You used the phrase leveraging the political power of hip-hop when you were describing the the origins of the panel. In your role as a congressman, how are you leveraging that political power of the hip-hop community?
Well, I think that there are others who are doing it better than I am. I'm just a piece of the puzzle in terms of having a forum like this, in terms of bringing more artists to Capitol Hill along with the hip-hop caucus, and really having them interact with legislators and having them really see a different side of politics and become more involved and possibly thinking about running for office themselves or even lobbying on behalf of issues that mean so much to them, be it food deserts, be it homelessness, be it job creation, or even our broken infrastructure or public school system.
So you want to see MCs just getting beyond commenting on the social issues and actually having an active role in correcting these problems in their own communities?
It's up to the MCs. You know, I think commentary is important because it can spark dialogue, and it may not be the MCs. The MCs could spark the ideas and others could execute. Or it could be the same. The MC could become more interested and see themselves in a political space, be it school board, city council, Congress, mayor's office, governor's office, and even the White House.
So you do see value in the political critique of hip-hop music?
I'm sorry?
You do see value in the political critique alone that comes from a lot of the MCs?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've been a part of the critique, and I'm still a part of the critique, even though I'm in the system. And I think you need outside agitation and inside instigation to create a necessary friction to bring forth change. And when you have those two, when you have those opposing views that are working at cross purposes with one another, I think you can see change. I think it's going to come from the outside critique and the activist community, pushing politicians to do better and be better and to think more seriously about the language that is contained inside of legislation.
You know, when I was a young person, I dropped out of high school at a very early age, and a lot of my political awareness came through listening to artists like Public Enemy or Black Star. That's where I developed a political consciousness. And when I was in high school, I wasn't really tuned in to political thinking. But through my love of this music, I developed this awareness of politics and on a global scale, really. I'm curious if there were any particular MCs that did that for you, that kind of helped you develop a political consciousness or pushed you in a certain direction politically.
I'd have to say Public Enemy and W.A., Eric B. and Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, Poor Righteous Teachers, Brand Nubian, Queen Latifah, KRS-One, X-Clan. You could even say Wu-Tang, which came after. But I think those groups, even a Tupac Shakur, you know. But I think a lot of those groups who were critical of the and Ghetto Boys, Above the Law, I think those groups who were critical and had great observations about what had been taking place in their communities, and even some of those groups who, I think what was brilliant about those groups is that you had to listen to what they were saying over and over, in many cases, to really unearth the hidden meaning, and then some of them were overt with their message. But it's that kind of brilliance that has made music so influential. Even if you go back and listen to a lot of popular hymns that were created by slaves, they had a double meaning or a hidden message. But they had to wrap their message and package it in a way that was innocuous to avoid persecution. But in terms of hip-hop, I mean, when N.W.A. gave their critique about the police, I was in agreement because I was experiencing harassment every week. And Public Enemy, they raised our awareness about various things on a political level. And even you know, I think Big Daddy Kane and Rakim, who were big on knowledge of self, they encouraged people like me and Brand Nubian X-Clan to really start studying more and getting knowledge of self. And I think after you get knowledge of self and who you are, it encourages you to teach others.
I know you have a lot going on in your day-to-day business as a congressman, but I'm curious if you're able to keep up at all with some of the newer voices in hip-hop music that are filling that same role that Public Enemy once had, people like Kendrick Lamar or J. Cole. Do you have time to kind of investigate that, this music, or do you follow that at all?
A lot of the staffers, they keep me in the loop. I am very busy and consuming a lot of information and studying often, but every now and then they'll send me a link. There are a few staffers who love Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole. I like what J. Electronica is doing. And there are a lot of other folks out there who I think are really making a dent. I mean, I like Future, you know. I'm a big T.I. fan. So I know those guys are older, but in terms of the new guys, I'm definitely feeling J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar.
Let's pause for a moment and listen to a selection from J. Electronica. This is Better in Tune with the Infinite. I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI.
Go inside here. Come along, I'll show you. And right here. Sit right down here. That's it. This is the same genuine, magic, authentic crystal used by the priests of Isis and Osiris in the days of the pharaohs of Egypt, in which Cleopatra first saw the approach of Julius Caesar and Mark Antony, and so on and so on. Now, you'd better close your eyes, my child, for a moment in order to be better in tune with the infinite.
It's frustrating when you just can't express yourself, and it's hard to trust enough to undress yourself. Stand exposed and naked in a world full of hatred. Sick thoughts of mankind control all the secret. I pause, take a step back, record all the setbacks. Fast forward.
That was J. Electronica with Better in Tune with the Infinite. I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI. If you're just tuning in, my guest tonight is U.S. Representative for Indiana's 7th Congressional District, Andre Carson. I wanted to ask you again about the Hip Hop and Politics panel. The 76-year-old Maryland representative and House Minority Whip, Steny Hoyer, isn't someone that has any connection at all to hip-hop culture, but he called your Hip-Hop and Politics panel the best issue forum held in Washington, D.C., and that's an exact quote. I'm curious how this event has been received by your colleagues in Washington, D.C.
It's been embraced. I mean, someone like Steny Hoyer, who usually, you know, stop by and praise it, he'll visit. Because I think he, as a seasoned politician, understands that this is an important demographic. You know, the most reliable demographic has always been seniors because they are up on the issues regularly. They're impacted by the issues. But I think we're seeing an awakening happening with younger people. And Steny Hoyer understands that. Nancy Pelosi understands that. And if we're going to be successful as elected officials, we have to be engaged and follow what young people are talking about and thinking about.
And where would you like to see this panel go? Are you content that it's just an annually staged discussion right now, or would you like to see this grow beyond Capitol Hill?
Well, the Hip Hop Caucus they're touring the country raising awareness about climate change, and they're bringing folks from the arts community, they're bringing celebrities along with them to raise awareness about our abuse of our environment. And I think that that's important in the hip-hop context because usually you'll hear issues about police brutality, poverty, and maybe education. But to talk about climate change, I think it shows that hip-hop does have an impact and is really reaching more deeply into how we can protect and save the earth.
To bring things back here locally, I have a lot of local hip-hop MCs here on the show and interview them and play their music. People like Oreo Jones, Sirius Black, ComDot is going to be on this episode with you. Again, I know you're busy. Do you keep any connection here with the Indianapolis hip-hop community, and do you have any thoughts on the local scene here?
Yeah, I mean, I respect everyone that you mentioned. You know, there are a lot of people out there. I do different events, and I'll have, you know, Indiana Jones or Rusty from formerly the Mud Kids will DJ, and any artist, you know, DJ Limelight, who's a friend of mine, as are the others. You know, if someone wants to come and perform, and I think the context is right, I'll give them a shot. So I try to stay in the mix to the best of my ability. My schedule has gotten me away from going to a lot of the events in Broad Ripple like I used to. But hopefully we can get back at least occasionally to show some love to local acts.
Great. And as I mentioned, I had a few questions from some of the WFYI listeners who sent in questions. Julia Muni Moore, who is the Director of Public Art for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, has a question about not hip-hop music itself, but one of the other elements of hip-hop culture. Julia asked how we can encourage policies so that graffiti and street art are not seen as vandalism.
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, I had a, even though I wasn't the best artist, my friends were a lot better than I was in terms of tagging or even, you know, writing art. They were just talented without any formalized training. I think that there has to be a space where graffiti can be respected and even protected. I know that there's an unwritten rule where if it's a work of art that comes from the city or if it's official, you're not supposed to tag it or deface it. I think that there should be a space where we could have those artists and give them a form to express their art. Perhaps that comes in the form of some kind of collaboration. We see it on Madison Avenue or US 31 going toward the south side right before you get Manual High School. You see it in other parts of the city. But the question becomes, how do we get city councilors and state legislators to craft legislation that will encourage those artists to work with NGOs and even local municipalities in finding ways in which their art can be expressed either on the building of a community center or some public facility that has a need to beautify the area. But at the same time, we have to make sure that the art is done in a way that will uplift the community and not take it down, because if it gets to a point where there's no intellectual value or there's no community value, then it becomes a distraction and it takes away from those artists who are really about the culture and those artists who really want to do something positive. It takes away from what they're trying to do.
Tristra New Year Yeager asks, what subject do you wish MCs talked about more often?
Education. Because I think that there are so many MCs who are brilliant in their own right who were impacted by the lack of true education in high school or even college, and they had to either on their own teach themselves or really learn from their environment. And it was because of that broken educational system that one could argue force or even harness their ingenuity. But on the other end, I think that if we could emphasize the fact that our high schools are graduating nearly 40 to 50% of students who are functionally illiterate, there's something that's happening in our schools that have not met the needs of kids. There are societal issues. There are kids who are coming out of single-parent homes. There are economic issues attached to it. But I think if we could have a rallying call to really support education and bringing back the arts in our schools. But I think that there's something to be said, and research supports that the arts are critical for brain development, they're critical for memory retention, and they also help in other fields such as math and science. And so the more that we can call for a greater investment in the arts, the better results we'll see with our kids.
And our final listener question comes from Jay Brookins, who is a beloved local hip-hop producer here in Indianapolis. And his question is referencing a hip-hop festival that happened last August called Trees. It brought together 30 to 40 local MCs. There was 1,000-plus attendees, and it was a very successful event. And Jay asks, how can we dispel the myth that hip-hop events incite violence and disruptive behavior?
I think we can dispel the myth when we are willing to gather facts about other events, be it rock events, DI events, or even other music events in general that have incidences of violence occur, but it seems to go undocumented. You have venues that, refuse to provide protection or insurance for hip-hop events because of the bad reputation. And I think that there must be internal controls within the culture that will say definitively, we need to resolve these issues more peacefully. When I first got into hip hop, you know, you had fewer fights because people would take out their aggression through breakdancing. And I think if we can get back to a point, now, hip hop has helped. I mean, if you look at the battle raps, where people go at it verbally, and they go for the jugular. But afterwards, there are very few incidences of people actually fighting because of a battle rap. And I think that there have to be internal controls within the culture to promote that, but also discourage any kind of activities that would deface and devalue what the culture is all about and what the founding fathers intended for the culture.
Excellent. And Representative Carson, if listeners are curious to learn more about your Hip Hop and Politics panel, is there any place online they can go to find more information?
They can go to the hiphopcaucus.com.
Hiphopcaucus.com. Great. I really appreciate you making time to speak with me today, Representative Carson. And before I let you go, I want to ask a lot of my guests to pick a song for us. Is there anything off the top of your head, any record you'd want me to spin?
Old or new?
Anything you want.
I'd have to say Exhibit C, J Electronica.
Oh, man, that's a great pick. Yeah, I would love to play that for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Carson. Appreciate
you. Thank you, brother. Bye-bye.
Yeah, take care. Thank you, Representative Carson. I also want to thank a couple members of your staff for helping to put this interview together. I want to thank our mutual friend, Kathy Suchet Downey, and your communications director, Jessica Gale. I'm Kyle Long. You're tuned in to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. As selected by Representative Andre Carson, this is J Electronica with Exhibit C. Up next, I'll be speaking with Indianapolis hip-hop MC Calm Dot.
As we proceed to give you what you need, oh, nine brother, get live, brother. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, and the hearing against the state of hip-hop versus
when I was sleeping on the train, sleeping on Mesero Lab out in the rain, without even a single slice of pizza to my name, too proud to beg for change, mastering the pain, when New York was calling Southern rap.
You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm joined in the studio by Indianapolis hip-hop MC, The Calm Dot. Thanks for being here, Calm.
Thanks for having me.
Calm Dot is going to be previewing some tracks for us from his upcoming release, the Gray Max L LP. Cool. I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about that project and your new single, Aqua, produced by Scott Metallic.
Right.
Anything is possible when you got connections. My only competition's in the mirror. Splash Aqua on your face to see it clearly. Wanna know how to move, just watch us. Ain't got nothing to lose, can't stop us. They thirst in the street for the aqua. We gotta give them what they need, baby, baby. Wanna know how to move, just watch us. Ain't got nothing to lose, can't stop us.
But first, I wanted to know a little bit more about your background.
Okay.
From what I understand, you grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ooh. You're not a native Hoosier, is that right?
Not in a traditional sense. You know, I was born into the military. So my father was a drill sergeant for the first 7 years of my life. So, you know, I was born in South Bend, you know, have a lot of roots there. But, you know, I remember Germany or, you know, was it Kansas or something more than I remember it earlier on. You know, I moved around a lot, you know what I mean? But Charlotte was a place that we moved to and stayed the longest. And that's where I really got a chance to find out who I was and, you know what I mean? And, you know, so I was there from like 87. Like, when we moved to Charlotte, Hurricane Hugo hit that night. You know what I mean? I don't know what that kind of omen that is.
So you spent most of your formative years in Charlotte?
Yeah, Charlotte. And, you know, I moved around a lot. So I used to live in Colorado as well. My father was out there. So I got a lot of peoples out there, too, family out there. So, I mean, I just moved around a whole lot. But Charlotte is where I was at the longest. You know what I mean?
At what point did you kind of come to Indy permanently and what brought you here?
Nah, I mean, it was long, a while back, man. My mom's needed me to come through. You know, some things happen in life, and, you know what I mean, you got to make decisions. So I came through to do what I do for my mom's and, you know, make sure she was all right. And, you know, that's what got me here initially and just made it work, you know what I mean? So I would be back and forth through some years, but, you know, now I'm here now, you know what I mean?
You know, you mentioned your dad was a drill sergeant,
yeah,
right? as an MC, you have this very strong and commanding voice.
Right.
I'm curious what role maybe your dad's line of work had to do with influencing your style.
You know, the crazy thing about it is my style is my father. I'm the spitting image of my father. Mm-hmm. I sound just like my father. I walk like him, everything. Like, you know what I mean? This is his hat I'm wearing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, it took some time to grow into that and into that role that he groomed me for. So, you know, big voices run in my family. You know what I mean? And my father, man. Oh, man. It's funny because, like, you don't know certain things about your parents until later on in life. And I didn't know how deep, how much of my style I owe to my father until one night he came to visit me from Baltimore. And we were just chilling in the crib, and we were having some drinks, just vibing the music or whatever. And then this record came on. I can't remember which one it was. It was probably the Whispers or something. A lot of Whispers. But I noticed his left leg started bouncing. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, his left leg was really bouncing. And people that know me or who've come to, you know, be a part of my shows, they know that my right leg bounces. When I really get into a zone, that's just what I do. You know what I mean? And to find out that this, I got it from this guy, I had no idea. All that came from my father, man. The guy, he was making tapes in the 80s, you know what I mean? The Gray Maxell, that's my foundation because he would be coming home with the Gray Maxell tapes, TDK tapes. You know, he still makes CDs and tapes to this day.
Just
loves
tapes.
Music, mixtapes,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, honing his skills with his voice. You know, I was always a part of that. I would try to steal tapes from him, you know, record my jams on the radio, you know, how I used to do back in the day. And, you know, I just owe a lot to him. You know what I mean? I owe a lot. I owe everything to my pops. You know what I mean? Straight up. Salute. You know?
You mentioned that a lot of your family members have big voices. I'm curious, at what point in your own life did you discover you had this big voice and that you had some sort of talent for being an MC and knew that's what you wanted to do?
It's crazy because, like, I had a problem with expression when I was younger. You know what I mean? I don't know if it was because of, you know, some of the traumatic things we was growing up around, but, you know, I had a problem with expression, so I wouldn't really, you know, speak a whole lot. You know, I was always, you know, goofy and funny or whatever, but nothing, like, serious. What motivated me to find my voice was Biggie's second album. Life After Death taught me a lot about how to do what I do using what I was born with. And the reason why I say that is because when you listen to Ready to Die and then you listen to Life After Death, it's like Biggie had hit his stride. He had already hit his stride with that One More Chance remix. That's when that flow, that voice, that tone that he used on the One More Chance remix became the tone that changed everything for him. You know what I mean? He just got in that good pocket. He would go up some in aggression, but it wasn't like Ready to Die, where it was almost like he was screaming on the mic. You know what I mean? With all that rage or whatever and that anger. But, you know, the Life After Death CD, you know, as a young kid listening to it, I was like, man, did I go back and listen to it because I want to sharpen my skills? I'm like, I don't want to sound like nobody else. You know what I mean? I want to talk how I talk. And, you know, you can compare flows and X, Y, and Z, but, you know, this is my voice. You know what I mean? So it made me really take a hard look at that. And the voice is powerful. I don't do a lot of overdubs and none of that stuff, because when you have that voice, you know, I've seen it work. You know, you see it work twice, three times, four times. And you just, you know, you got to run with it. It's just what God gave you.
So how did you get from that point where you had an awareness that you had this voice to actually going into the studio and making beats and recording on those tracks?
I don't know if there was a more defining moment or point for me than the initial point, because that set the tone for everything. I was off after that. I was, you know, I'm going to do this. You know, I was like, what, 13, 14, I think, getting home from school. You got time to mess around. So I'm at my man Devin crib. You know what I mean? And my man AJ would come through, and then I just kicked the beat, and Devin would start rhyming. AJ was out of control back then. He still is. Jay Sicko, that's my man. You know, I was just amazed at, like, wow, he's just pulling words out of thin air, and he's just doing whatever you want to do with it, and people are listening. It just made me realize, yo, if you say things in this manner, people will listen to what you have to say. And for a kid growing up with problems with expression, that blew the lid off, because now I understand, like, okay, when I'll get ready to say something, I'm going to say it like this.
Our mutual friend, DJ Metronome, told me you had a career as a freestyle battle MC. Is that right?
I used to battle a lot, man. Like, I was during my stint in Colorado, you know what I'm saying? I call it my tour of duty. You know, we formed this crew called the Battle Cats. And this is like 97 through 99, maybe 2000. You know, it stood for battling anything that these liberal MCs consider a threat. And we would take it to the point where we're showing up at malls battling. We're going to all the house parties battling. That's how the crew formed. That's why I went around house parties and malls battling people. Some today would probably call it bullying. You know what I mean? But, you know, I found the best. That carried all the way over when I first came to Indy. There's this funny story, man, about going down to Bloomington with a Metronome. This is Cat Half Blown. Salute to Half Blown, man. That dude was like the freestyle king at IU back in the day. You know what I mean? But we faced off. Me, just in my hunger and how I am, you know what I mean? We was on our way and down there, and Metronome was like, yeah, this is Kid. He's down there. He's nice. X, Y, Z. He played me a CD or whatever. And I was like, so I just reached for the eject button, you know, just toss it out the window, man. He's like, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to tell him I did that, too, when I get there. And I did. It was a good run, man. It was a lot of different battles, but I just lost the passion for it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
you mentioned Aqua. Aqua is a preview of your new forthcoming LP, yeah. The Gray Max L.
Yeah.
It's produced by a very highly respected hometown figure.
Scotty, what up?
I had his dad on this show a couple months ago. His dad is a legendary musician in his own right. Aqua is a very powerful record, both musically and lyrically, and just your whole presence on that track. Whatever it's gonna be, it'll be, which means maximize your opportunities, building communities,
enlighten our brothers who think foolishly. Check out the crown of my wig. Aqua is just, it's one of them joints, some classic raw hip hop joints you used to see on Rap City back in the day when you got home from school. You used to just see that. That'd be the first video. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't a radio reach or nothing. It was just like, man, look, you know, this is what I do. It's no nonsense. This is raw rap. This is what we grew up on, you know? And you can't lose sight of that, keeping that your sword sharp in that type of arena, man, because, you know, cats will try to come for you, man, if they don't think you got no bars on deck.
I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Indianapolis hip-hop MC, Comdot.
Peace.
We were just talking about Aqua, which, as I mentioned, is a preview of your forthcoming LP, The Gray Max L. And before we came into the studio, you told me that this LP has a lot of meaning for you.
You have to start with the title, you know, The Gray Max L LP. What's a Gray Max L? Let's open up the dialogue so we can talk about it. The Gray Max L is just important to hip hop as the DJ is, you know, because we're talking about cassette tapes. And when you're talking about cassette tapes, you're talking about an entire culture. You know, we can't just pick up pieces of the culture that, you know, are just fitting to us. No, we have to respect the entire culture. And the tape deck was monumental in our lives because there was no other way to get that joint. You had to record it off the radio, or you had to dub it off of your man who had it, and not too many people had it. There was no internet or download or nothing like that. So you got guys who still to this day have stuff that the world don't even have because it was only on that tape. And so I wanted people to kind of remember that era, that time, and introduce, you know, cats who didn't know, you know, to the same era and the time. So now you're becoming exposed to more of this hip hop culture, because we can't forget the stuff that made this culture great. And the Gray Max L LP, the Gray Tape, it's paying homage to that. And that was a big part of my life, you know. And my man who produced like 90% of the album, the Mighty DR, made all of his beats and put them on Gray Max L tapes. And he's well known in Charlotte for doing that. So if you got a DR tape, you got some fire.
I mean, I was part of that cassette culture as a kid. I didn't have the Gray Max L's. I had the generic Kmart brand cassette. But for me, these tapes were, you know, the songs I loved the most. You know, I'd hit record when the songs I loved the most came on the radio.
Is that creation of the playlist.
Yeah. Is that sort of the theme of the LP? That
yes.
All these songs are just like straight classics?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's 19 songs.
Oh, wow.
19 songs. And I wanted to recreate the tape. Sometimes you just never knew what was on the tape. You forgot sometimes what was on the tape. You may have halfway dubbed over your mom's tape. your dad's tape. He doesn't know that he's about to hear the Beastie Boys interrupting his smooth jazz programming on his tape. Brass Monkey starts playing, you know. That's just some things about the tape that made it beautiful. So I'll have things on this record, but it's strategically placed, but it doesn't feel the same way all the way through. It shifts. So it's an experience. The tape was an experience, and I miss it. Because here's the main reason why I miss it. There was more pressure on an artist to be great, good or great, okay, when we're talking about the tape. Because who wants to fast forward an entire album that you just paid money for? So that tape had to be excellent because we wasn't taking that tape out. If it popped, breaking out the tweezers and you know, the Phillips heads and all that. And, you know, just that's what I mean, the whole culture about it. You loved your music and you had an intimate relationship with it like that. It was a closer relationship. Now everything is so fast. Everything is now. And people don't have time to digest what people are saying. There's great music out there in the world. No one's digesting it enough, you know, and sitting with it enough to know, like, yo, cherish it. Because it's not always going to be here. I want people to slow down, man. Enjoy the music. Enjoy the process. Listen to this whole album. It's a journey, man.
You've sent me some tracks, some preview tracks from the LP. And lyrically, these aren't just, you know, battle raps. It's not your typical kind of radio type of content that we hear nowadays in a lot of popular hip-hop music.
Right.
You get into some deeper content in the songs. Do you want to talk a little bit about your lyrics and your approach to writing lyrics for the LP?
Sure. So I have certain songs. I have you know, a record called Our Song. It's just a dedication to you know, family and friends who, you know, either no longer here or were here, but they're shelling them for themselves, so to speak. I have a record called Foolish featuring a good friend of mine, my man BJ13, and my homegirl Kenya Fadia. K Fadia is immensely talented, and I hope she drops an album one day.
I'm like Big when he said he was sitting in his room, pissy drunk, listening to stylistic tunes with my ego bruised. Damn, I miss my muse, sinking deep in the depths of an intense blues. This ain't my type of hue, ain't my type of song. How the fuck I catch feelings? This ain't like me at all. Saw you in the spot with dude, I ain't like that at all. Got songs I wrote about you at the height of it all, to get that feeling we once felt, the life of its own. Just part of my recovery for me to grow. I couldn't walk around the city with that feeling no more, but listen, it was my mission to be there for you. Pardon, it was an honor just to care for you. You shed tears and I'd hold you and wipe them away. You try to leave, I should have let you, but convinced you to stay. In all honesty, son, I blame myself. As the fool who rushed in, no one to blame but self. When the real sheds his tears, he gets stronger. She made me a better man with more to offer. The pain was my root, which grew to sprout my truth. Spewed it in the booth, reflect the spark, the loose. They say it's better to have loved than never loved at all. But dog love is pain and I don't want it no more. No more.
The record is about breaking up. His verse and how he handles his breakup is his own bag. You know, so whatever language he chooses to use, that's what he chooses to use. And I know the place that it came from because, like I said, that's my man. So I know it's from a true place. That's why I put it on there. And I was going through a breakup at the time, too. I have a record called Combo's Lament.
Strong will, motivated, listening to God's bill. Rhyme with the raw skill, grind for the large bill. Invest that in something substantial. Triple the financials, or money talk, people understand you. Careful who you tell what you plan to do. Snakes will Bill Gates you. Steal your ideas for you make moves. Front and try to play like it's coincidence. Crush them all in increments. Miss me with that repetitive.
It's an honest look in the mirror. It's almost like I'm talking to myself. Just looking at life, man, you know, battling depression and, you know, and just hard times and just trying to do it the right way.
Last month on the show, I had on John Rogers and Oreo Jones, the organizers of the Treece Hip Hop Festival in Fountain Square. I know you performed. You were one of the artists performing at Treece last August. Nearly everyone I've spoken to that was involved in the festival or attended the festival classified it as a massive success. And I wondered what your thoughts were on the Treece Festival and
it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen doing music as an artist personally. It's the most beautiful thing, the most beautiful day ever. I mean, the spirit of hip hop, the vibe of hip hop, the love, the support, and, you know, it was just so real. there were no problems, there were no incidents, there was no harassment. It was just people out enjoying what we do and supporting each other. And I think that was the greatest day I've ever seen as an independent artist. Monumental. Salute to Oreo and the company for doing that.
This question is somewhat related. I wondered if you had any thoughts on the state of Indianapolis hip hop. Do you think it's in a good place? Is there anybody out there that you listen to or pay attention to?
I think Indianapolis hip hop is in the best place it's ever been, to be honest with you. I mean, you got dudes out here who just Pope Adrian Bless, Ace One, this kid Young Stokes, man. Chris Stokes is going to be something special, man. You know, E-Jazz, you have your Son of Thought, you know, your Fee Rays out there. You know, you're always going to have Rusty. The list goes on, man. Right. I mean, I've done some research here, man. We talk about, like, you know, from NAP to Little Nut to Khamisi to, you know, Trilogy and these guys, you know. And now when you look at it, this is like so many different styles and flavors. It's all right, man. It's in a beautiful place. And I hope that these guys can get the records necessary to take them to that next level. And I want to try to help some of them as well, you know, because I like what they're doing.
I know you have your sights set on having a national impact with your LP.
Global.
Do you feel like this is a good place to do that from?
It ain't where you at, man. You know, DJ Premier was from Houston. You know what I mean? And we know that story. Greatest producer in hip hop, along with Dilla and Dr. Dre. And I'm in Indianapolis, but planes take off every day. We have the internet, you know, train, Greyhound, whatever, man. You know, I'm here. You know, I got 3 album release parties to go to, you know, one in Charlotte, of course, Indy, December 16th, and working on a date in Colorado and any other place. I love Indianapolis because of the energy that they give me, you know, the support to push that pen, to know that they want that raw and I can get it to them.
This is a little bit down the road, but you mentioned your upcoming album release party, which is happening December 16th at the Hi-Fi in Fountain Square.
Yes.
And I wanted to give you a chance to give folks a heads up on how they can keep track of you on social media.
Oh, yeah. You can, you know, I'm around, man. You can find me, you know, on Twitter at the Comdot, you know, Gmail. You know, if you want to do some business, contact me at comdotcorp@gmail.com. And we're building the website right now, thecomdot.com.
And they can check out your music on SoundCloud, which is SoundCloud.
Yeah, the Comdot.
The Comdot. Yeah. And I wanted to end this segment today with a song off the upcoming LP, The Gray Maxell. This is our song.
Yeah, the record is, you know, me paying homage to those who are no longer physically here with me or, you know, in the mental capacity to be here with me. And it's just me taking a moment to, you know, salute them and let them know that I love them. And, you know, they're still just as big a part of me today as they were when they physically were here. They live through me.
Calm, thank you for being here today. I'm a big fan of your work. Love the single Aqua. It sounds great. Thank
awesome.
You so much.
Thank you.
I'm Kyle Long. You're listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. My guest has been Indianapolis hip-hop MC, The Comdot. And we're going to listen to a song now off his upcoming LP, The Gray Maxell. This is Comdot with our song.
When our dreams have finally come true now. I sing a song for you because your song is overdue now. I sing a song for my who just came up out of prison, striving to make an honest living, resisting whatever inch of their existence to not make that entrance back in that kitchen. Listen, it's hard for my dogs to get jobs. They got felonies, went from soft to selling weed. Most had good intentions to improve the quality of living. In their vision, poverty conditions. Some dudes is idiots. All they want to do is get in it. Up the lives of the innocent. Those be the guys you gotta keep at a distance. They snitches, they whisper your business. Like I side with that ride for real. My guy Mikey Lane was a rider for real. Live your life by the code. OG, 20 years old. Salute my dude, God bless your soul. Now sing along.
Sing that song.
I sing a song for my that's gone or just came home.
Especially for you,
cause you the truest I ever know. Come on. My dreams have finally come true now. I sing a song for you cause your song is overdue now. Welcome home crazy, stay out of prison my
Congratulations on your baby. That ain't enough to make you change it up. Nothing will. We was young criminals, but now this real. Get at me, nigga. I ain't hard to find. You been on my mind, so I'm reaching out through this all the rhyme. The dirty red with us, but then gone. Paranoid, schizophrenic. We gotta help homes. I hurt my heart to see a nigga so smart receiving no medical attention, falling apart. The way they handling this is bogus. They need to get focused and let a doctor properly diagnose them. I want my back, but it ain't my call. Should I take charge?
That's all the time we have for tonight's show. I want to thank my guests, Representative Andre Carson and ComDot. Thank you for tuning in. You can catch Cultural Manifesto every Wednesday night at 9 here on 90.1. And you can find 3 years worth of columns I've written in the archives of NuVo.net. I'm Kyle Long. You've been listening to Cultural Manifesto on 90.1. Thanks, and see you next week.